So we're continuing this morning our series, Your Faith Awakens. At the beginning of the series, I thought awake and asleep were these diametrically opposed things. I'm starting to realize how much of a spectrum it is. How many of you, your alarm clock goes up and you're awake? Okay, four of you. The rest of us, the sanctified, the alarm clock goes off, and I'm somewhere on the spectrum. I'm a little bit more awake than I was, but I'm not fully awake until I have that third cup of coffee. When we're looking on this awake spectrum, we're asking the question, what wakes up our faith? I've got to back up, and I've got to say this over and over and over and over. To wake up from sleep assumes you're alive, right? You don't go to the graveyard and yell, wake up. It doesn't work too well. To see your faith awaken means that you already have faith. This isn't something where we go, well, hold on. I have no faith, but if I do this, then I'll get some. We're talking the wrong dynamic. My assumption for this whole sermon is that you are people of faith. That's why you're here. Now, I know some of you may be going, I don't think I am anymore. If that's where you're at, let's talk. Let's enter into a dialogue. Some of you are just checking out Promise, and you wanted to find out what we're about. If you're claiming at this point in life you have no faith, let's have a dialogue. If you're right here and you're like, my faith used to be really strong, but then this happened, and now my faith is really tiny, that's cool. We can deal with that. Let's be honest about that. Likewise, some of you are going, I know I have faith. I was told that in my baptism I got it, but it's this tiny faith. Jesus speaks of that too. One of the ways we encourage our faith is we exercise it. One of the ways we wake up our faith, by the way, if you don't know, I just got back from an awesome vacation with my daughter. It was her graduation present. We went all through Europe, and one of the days, we got to go to Mount Vesuvius. We left Rome at way too early in the morning. We took a bus ride for 3 hours down to Vesuvius, and we were, at that point, some level of asleep. And then we got to the base of Vesuvius, and over the bus announcement, they said, we just wanted to tell you, this is the most deadly active volcano in the world. And we were awake. And we hiked up to the top of it. It was amazing. And there were times we started walking, and it was uphill, and it was steep, and we wanted to quit because we were tired. And there were 3 checkpoints. At checkpoint 1, Caitlin just looks at me and she goes, let's stop here. It's pretty. And I said, no, let's keep going. It's going to get even better. And when we finally got up to the top, we were dead tired, but we were wide awake. See, if you'll join us on this journey at Promise that we're taking in making disciples, I can guarantee you'll have the same experience. As you're making disciples, there will be time where you are dead tired, but you'll be wide awake. Your faith will be stirred in whole new ways. There will also be times where it's very, very scary, which, by the way, is super fun, standing at the top of an active volcano and you just say things to the people that are kind of freaking out, like, man, is it supposed to be this hot? So today, as we jump into this, we're going to see that it's a little bit scary. If you have your Bibles, pop them open to that Matthew text that was just read. We want to dig into this just a little bit. It's Matthew 10. And if this sounded familiar, and if you don't have your Bibles, open up your phones. I guarantee there's a Bible on them. I called the internet and had them do that. Jesus sending out the 12 in Matthew is almost identical to Jesus sending out the 72 in Luke. It's 2 different dudes recording 2 different stories, but the call that Jesus gives them is almost identical for their first missionary journey. And here's what Jesus says. He looks at them in verse 1, and he calls the 12 to him, and he gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to cure every disease. And then we're going to jump down to verse 11. I love this part. Jesus says, as you enter a home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. And we talked about that a few weeks ago, that when you enter a home, the greeting of the day was peace be with you, and there's some people that would receive that peace and some people that wouldn't. We talked about how our greeting of the day today is, hey, how you doing? And there's some people that want to share that with you, and there's some people that don't. Even when you do pause and leave time for an annotated answer, hey, how you doing? There's some people that they just don't want to receive that question from you. If they do want to answer that question, if they want to enter into a relationship, they're what we call a person of peace. And Jesus says that. He says, if you enter a home, give it your greeting. If it's deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it's not, let it return to you. And then Jesus goes on and he says, if anybody is not welcoming you or listening to your words, leave that home in that town and shake the dust off your feet. Those are Jesus' instructions for evangelism. How many of us have heard a different narrative? If you've been raised in the church, I actually remember when I was in undergrad, I was really involved with this campus ministry, and we made this thing called a hit list. Probably not the smartest vocabulary choices, but it was people who weren't Christians, and I noticed what we really wanted to do is convert the Satanist. We wanted to convert those people. They were on our hit list, the people that didn't like us, who didn't welcome us, who were antagonistic towards us. How many of us, if we're honest, when we think about missions, that's where we go? Or we go to people that are really, really different than us, that we have no relationship with. Jesus is saying the exact opposite. As the youth prepared, we sent them out on a mission trip this week. Elon and I spent a lot of time talking about that. What's that look like? What do missions look like if instead of saying, here's the way we create a mission trip because it vibes with our culture, going, how did Jesus do missions? Oddly, they're really quite different. Deep down inside, we deal with this weird thing, don't we? Is if we actually say that Jesus looks at it, and if you were to read the Luke 1, Jesus gets even more specific. He says, don't go to the Samaritan. He says, don't even talk to the people on the road. Does that weird you out a little bit? Have you ever thought about missions that way, going, you know what, I'm not going to go to these people? Anybody heard of Warren Buffett? Anybody heard of Jimmy Buffett? That's why I love Promise. More of your hands went up. Warren Buffett was in this interview, and they asked him, they said, how did you become so successful? And it was incredible, his response. He said, what I did is I made a list when I was young of 25 things I wanted to do with my life. I just wrote them out, which, by the way, I really encourage you to do something similar. Write out, what are 25 things you want to do with your life? And then he said, I looked at the list and I prioritized them. I said, this is the number one thing I'd want to do. This is the number two things I want to do. This is number three, and so on and so forth through 25. And then he rewrote the list, prioritizing it. Number one, I want to do this. Number two, I want to do this. Number three, I want to do this. And so on and so forth. Anybody really super impressed by that? I wasn't either. I mean, just the making of the list was nothing. He goes, the newspaper reporter just pushed into this and said, okay, a lot of people do that. What made you so successful? And he said, the next thing I did is I drew a line between number five and number six. And everything above the line, they were my first priorities. They were the things I focused on. And this is the difference between Warren Buffett's success and most of our success. And I'd also say it's the difference between Jesus's ministry and most of the ministry that I see in churches in America today. Number 6 through 25, Warren Buffett calls the avoid at all costs list. Right? How many of us, if we're honest, we have done that list, at least in our head. We say, I want to make sure I do this, and I want to make sure I do this. And we may not have taken the time to write it down, but we know what our top priorities are. We also know our second-tier priorities. But the second tier priorities, they're a little bit easier. They're a little bit less scary. And so many of us, we spend our lives doing number 6, number 7, number 8, number 9, those things that they don't really matter. They're important, but they're not the most important. See, don't get me wrong. Jesus wants everybody to come to him. Jesus wants everybody to hear the gospel, but he realizes when he's sending out the disciples that you can't be everything to everyone. You personally can't minister to everyone in the world. Never, ever, ever confuse the job. Hey, Sam, can you kill that one light on the far right? It's getting really bad. Thank you. Everybody look at it. It's that one right there. And if we can time this a little. Oh, nope, the one right over there. Okay, ready? Nope. My magic is worn off. And the one right next to it, too. Sorry. It's not going to go? Okay, I just figured. Now everybody's staring at it. Before it was just like I caught people like looking up at it. And we're all like kittens, aren't we? How fun would that be with a laser pointer? Okay, so we'll take a cleansing breath. You are the light of the world. Right, how many of us, we don't do that kind of prioritizing? So what we do instead is, when you read the Bible, realize there's some things that are written to the whole church, and that doesn't even mean just promise. That means all LCMS Lutherans. No, it means the whole church. That's Catholics and Methodists and Pentecostals, and the whole church will reach the whole world. You personally can't. Actually, it's so far that that's not your job, biblically. How many of us is that just a sigh of relief? I'm amazed how many people walk into my office and they've got a person that they really, really, really want to know Jesus, but they're not a person of peace for them. That is, they don't welcome you. They don't listen to you. And we'll talk in a few months about they don't serve you. That's what Jesus says to look for, the people that listen to you, that welcome you, and that serve you. And we spend tremendous amounts of time and energy trying to witness, trying to convert this person who isn't a person of peace. Jesus says, don't worry about that. Can we just sit with that for a second? Can we just let that sink in? Because that is so counterintuitive. It's so counter to what our culture has taught, our subculture within Christianity. But what would happen if we focused on discipling those people who are people of peace? What would happen if I said, you know what? I'm not going to worry about those people anymore. I'm going to listen to the people that welcome me, that listen to me, that serve me, the people that Jesus defined as people of peace. Could you imagine just for a second? Oh, and the reason, by the way, if you flip over to Luke, if you are underlining in your Bible, in Luke 10:16, Luke unpacks this a little bit more. He digs a little bit deeper. He explains that the people that listen to you are actually the people that are listening to Jesus. He says, there's part of me in you, and that's the message that they're listening to you. So don't get too arrogant and full of yourself when you do this. But what would happen? Can you sit there and go, hey, here's the people of peace in my life. Here's the people who welcome me, who listen to me. What would it look like to keep that list? And what would it look like to invest that energy into making disciples of them? I just sat there and I did the math. There's about 150 of us in here today. If each one of us just said, hey, I'm going to take 2 or 3 people and spend the next year discipling them, you can do the math on that, right? We couldn't all fit in this room. We'd have to redo the floor a lot sooner. See, that's the ministry that Jesus is calling us to. You guys are quieter than the other group, so I don't know what to do with that. I guess here's how it starts. Because some of you, maybe you've already made that list, and you're going, great, Pastor, I listened to you 3 weeks ago. I was doing the, they welcome me, and whether they listened to me or not, that was pretty easy. I realize some of these people don't. Some of them just welcome me because they're trying to sell me something. Some of them just welcome me because they want to tell me their story. They don't care about me. They don't want to hear anything that I'm saying. If you have those people, here's where it starts. Jesus says, and we go back to verse 10:1, Jesus called the 12 to him. And he gave him authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. What's it look like if we start doing what Jesus did? If we start driving out the impure spirits, not by our own power, but by the power of Jesus. See, I used to think driving out impure spirits was you have to have, the person has to be tied to a bed. They have to be like really white with veins showing. Generally, pea soup is involved. What I found is impure spirits are a lot easier to recognize than that. It's the dude that comes up to me and he's like, man, I got married a year ago and now all we do is fight. There's so much tension and there's so much stress and I'm wondering why I even said I do. Can we call that what it is? That's an impure spirit. That's not the way that Jesus wanted it to be. It's not what God created marriage for. And what's it look like to just cast out that impure spirit? Sometimes it's as easy as looking at the person and going, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. I talked to one of the guys here who's he's discipling several young men, and it was amazing. The young man, he'd been married about 9 months, and they were fighting all the time. And I loved his response. He looks at him and he goes, well, then stop. What was funny is that's all it took. The young man looked at him. He's like, I never thought of that before. I don't have to keep the fight going. Guys, marriage is night and day because that impure spirit was cast out. What we do as Christians is we go in and we speak that life and that truth into the world. What's that look like in your life? See, those of you that are members here, we say that our mission statement is to deliberately disciple. As the question we got to ask is, who are you deliberately discipling? Are you doing what Jesus called us to do? Some of you have no clue where to start, and that's cool. Then let's start this together. Some of you go, man, I don't know if I can even speak to these impure spirits because I got this brokenness in my life that I really don't know what to do with. This person in my life has been sick for so long, and you even talk about healing, and it just makes me mad at God. How am I going to disciple somebody else in that? Some of you are going, man, impure spirits, how can I talk to that? It's been so rough, and the addiction is so deep that it's never going to break. What we did at Promise is I believe, because Jesus said it, that there's some of these things that are only cast out by prayer and fasting. We're going to unpack that in a couple months. But we want to take a baby step in that direction. In this little room to the right, after service, from here until the building burns down, there's a little cross that's made out of cork. And if you have a prayer request and you want to write it down there and just tack it to the wall, we're going to have people praying for you throughout the weeks and months to come. But we'll also have people sitting in there. If you want to just a moment after the service to sit and pause and process and pray, there's chairs in there. If you need somebody to pray with you that you're going, man, I want to just throw my hands up. I want to have somebody come alongside me. That's what that space is for. I want to pause for a second. And we want to really ask, what's God calling you to do next? Not to earn his favor, because he already loves you perfectly. Rather, it's because he loves you perfectly that we want to step into what he's doing and do it with him. So we pause for a minute as we process that individually and just ask that of our Father.